One of the things that I didn't understand growing up, when I started my business, I grew up with like computers and stuff. So I thought I could do it all from the computer. But businesses are full of people and people do business with people. So I have to get out there. I have to talk to people.
Are you looking for ways to shorten your marketing learning curve and help your organization survive and thrive? Welcome to Relish This, the Purpose Marketing Podcast, a show for purpose-focused leaders who want to use marketing techniques to fuel their organization's growth. If you're a returning listener and you haven't subscribed already, we'd love to have you. Also, please consider leaving a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Now here's your host, author and marketing specialist, Stu Swinefort.
Hey everybody, my guest today is Keith Hartman, and he is the founder and CEO of Better World Products. And Better World helps people grow sustainably on Amazon. They do brand management and Amazon listing optimization and other activities on Amazon to help your product shine on that platform. And he and I met at 1% for the Planet Summit a few years ago and really kind of hit it off. He's a great guy. He's been helping out with Netherland Area Trails Organization with some things for them. And we just had a really fun conversation about building relationships and how to launch a product on Amazon. And I think this is a really fun show. So here we go. Keith, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Stu?
I'm doing well. Thank you for bearing with the technical challenges we were experiencing there. I appreciate your patience.
No problem at all.
So thank you so much for being on the show. You've been really gracious with your time and your company helping out one of the nonprofits that I'm on the board of, which is the Netherland Area Trails Organization, trying to help us get our acts together a little bit in terms of Google grants and leveraging some of the awesomeness there. So we probably would love to chat with you about that a little bit. But first, I'd like to hear a bit about your company, which is called A Better World Products. And you guys help people get optimized on Amazon. Is that right?
Yeah. So I'm the founder of Better World Products. I started the company a little over 5 years ago. Back then, it was just kind of a way to fund my travels around the world. But since then, we've turned into a marketing and advertising agency with a specific focus on Amazon and a priority on helping bring better products onto the platform.
Nice. How do you define better products? What are your criteria for that?
Good question. One of the things I found out the hard way is we certainly can't seek perfection. There's lots of different ways to figure out a better product, whether that's product design. It could be simply efficiencies in the weight they do thing. It could be certifications, fair trade, US organic, could be vegan, could be someplace in their supply chain where they found a better, could be nonprofit partners that they've committed to, whether they're a member of 1% for the Planet or the Conservation Alliance or something like this. And it could also be that they're a B Corp and they focus on creating a better world in that way.
Oh, that's great. So you just kind of have a broad range of ways that people can identify that way. And I know we met originally at the 1% for the Planet conference out in Portland, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It seems like a long time ago now.
It does, doesn't it? That was a couple of years ago. That was a really fun experience. We've been able to go to several of the 1% for the Planet, what do they call those, meetups, I guess, that have been really cool. They always have great speakers and it's such a great organization. And yeah, we met there. How long has your company been a part of that program?
I would say I was just looking at our account before and definitely at least 2018. I started pretty quickly. I knew that was kind of a part of what I wanted to do going out of the gate.
Right. Have you been able to work with other 1% partners?
Do you mean companies or do you mean like nonprofits?
No, well, obviously with the 1% program, you select a nonprofit partner to donate your time or your volunteer time or revenue. 1% of your top line revenue goes toward environmental causes. But I was just curious if you've been able to land other partners in terms of other 1% companies who may need to launch their products on Amazon.
We haven't actually. One of the toughest parts about trying to make sustainability in Amazon is that people in the sustainability space hate Amazon. So 1% for the Planet or B Corps, these are going to be the people who are really on the edge, really trying to push the limits of that. So their openness to Amazon, I'm sure it shifted a lot since the pandemic, but we did a lot of outreach the first 2 or 3 years and we got a lot of rejection.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I can understand that Amazon, though it started off kind of with some things that seemed kind of unique or at least thoughtful in mind, it feels like it has pivoted a bit over the last few years to have a significantly more kind of corporate greed sort of feel to it, which is a bummer because it is such a widely used marketplace. And maybe you can speak to the search engine aspect of it as well. We definitely been seeing that in recent conversations, how people are really just starting to use Amazon almost as if it were a search engine for products. Have you seen how companies have been able to capitalize on that particular shift?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the main things we do is SEO for Amazon. There's a heavy SEO component, the same as it is with Google or Bing or any other search engine. Amazon is a search engine the same way. It has a lot of different places to enter data. It even now has its Climate Pledge program that people can filter for when they're searching for products. They can filter for specific certifications. They can also filter for things like veteran-owned businesses, small businesses, anything along those lines. So there's a lot of SEO components to it. Most of what we work with is just making sure the product can be found by the people who are the target audience, by the people who would want to buy it.
It's pretty noisy on Amazon. I don't even know how many SKUs or whatever their equivalent to that would be. But do you know how many different products are listed on Amazon at any given time?
It's in the tens of millions, at least in the US. Globally, it's probably in the hundreds of millions.
Yeah. So what can people do if you do have an eco brand and you are wanting to spread the word on that, or you have a brand that you think would do well on Amazon? What are some of the top, maybe even DIY things that people can do to try and help improve their performance there on the platform?
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you one of the things we look for before we can even really work with a brand is that they've got great product photography, and that's going to help you everywhere. That's like no matter what. And you know, a lot of the things that you want to come to the table with Amazon with is going to help you everywhere. It's going to be standard, making sure you've got good marketing channels. Like you, the stronger your marketing off Amazon is, the stronger your results on Amazon is going to be, because it doesn't matter where people see the product, they're probably going to go to Amazon to buy it. So that's one of the things that we tell people a lot of the time. If they're trying to start out and they want to start out on Amazon, I'd actually recommend them building their own channels first.
Okay. So would you recommend e-commerce on their website or leveraging Shopify or something like that? Is that kind of the play?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if they're a really small startup, they're just getting started, then you've just got your local community, Facebook Marketplace, Instagram. It's just a real small business hustling kind of thing you got to do to figure out what you're even building. When you're bigger than that and you've got people who want to buy the product, then Shopify. And then after that, I would say go to Amazon once you've verified that the demand for the product is there.
Gotcha. Are there any penalties? I know at one point, well, people spoke about penalties for duplicate content on different platforms. For example, if you use the same blog post on your website and then had that republished on someone else's website. At one point, there was a lot of buzz that Google, who's the kind of the elephant in the room here, was dinging people for that. I think that real world examples doesn't really happen that much. But would you say that people would need to come at Amazon from a different perspective in terms of their content, particularly their copy?
Yeah. So a big part of our process in the beginning when we're deciding what to write about is not only figuring out what the benefits that you bring to the market are, but also figuring out through analysis of what's already on the market, what customers are looking at. So a lot of what we'll do is we'll actually mine the reviews that people have left on your competitors' products, and we'll see what people love and what they hate about the products. And we'll take that and focus on that for your listing copy and integrate the SEO as well, figuring out what people are searching for.
Interesting. And so they could get their copy dialed on their own site and then take that to Amazon and then just make some additional tweaks based upon what you're seeing over there.
You could. I mean, generally, I wouldn't recommend it just because you're missing the SEO component. But I mean, if you're just doing it yourself, then you've got to work with something, right? I mean, if that's what you're going to do, then use all of the space you have. You have 200 characters or bytes in the title. Make sure you're utilizing all of that. And understand that what's in front of the title is going to be more important, because what's on the second half of the title is going to be cut off in a lot of cases, whether it's in the search results, whether it's in the different type of ad placements, whether it's on mobile or desktop. You want to make sure you're prioritizing what people care about in the front. And then you have 250 bytes in each bullet. You want to use all of that. You have 2000 bytes in the description. You want to use all of that. You want to fill out all the fields. So big thing for food is the nutritional information. You can put all that information in specific fields. You can say it's organic. You can say the allergens, all of that. The more information you put in there, the more Amazon's going to trust your product. And the more people who are filtering out, say, those allergens for your food product are going to find your product because your product's going to be there.
Gotcha. That's great information. I bet there are a lot of listings out there that could use some optimization help because people just don't understand how that whole system works. That's pretty fascinating. I mean, obviously, Amazon's kind of the giant out there, at least in the US. What are you seeing in terms of trends? Are people sticking with Amazon or are you seeing things shift to other online platforms? What's the latest in bringing a product to market?
Yeah. I mean, so what we saw during the pandemic was two things. One, it was an explosive growth for Amazon. But in the early stages of the pandemic, it was only explosive growth for essential items. So Amazon didn't permit anyone to ship anything else in because they needed all that warehouse space for the essential goods. And what that's turned into over time with the mess that the supply chain is in is that it's hard for people to get most of their inventory in. And so in that case, what was originally Amazon's value prop of having everything, they suddenly find themselves out of stock of a lot of things very frequently. And people are also testing Walmart, people like eBay. What we're seeing now that the pandemic is not over, but people are pretty much over it, is people are going back out. And so people are trying to understand, and a lot of what we have to communicate is that sales are going down. It's just people are moving back into the real world again.
Okay. So Amazon sales are going down, but brick and mortar sales are coming back up.
Yeah. I mean, Amazon is still huge. It's still acquired an incredible amount of customers who are now loyal to the platform. It was a great idea 2 years ago. It's an even better idea now. It'll probably be an even better idea next year. It's like, if you've got a website, you got to be on Google. If you're selling a product, you got to be on Amazon.
What are some of the things that you've seen your clients to kind of position themselves as a better world product? Are there any unique things that people have done to kind of take something that might be otherwise not necessarily thought of in that category and have it show up?
Well, I mean, what I was going to say originally is what we've been focusing on right now is the climate friendly badge. As you might know, like one of the biggest obstacles to anything is building trust with the customer and showing them that they are what you think they are and they can trust your purchase of a product. Amazon carries a lot of that weight just by having a Prime member and knowing they can return it. That's like their big value prop. It's not only convenience, but they trust that buying from Amazon is a low risk event versus buying from a store where they don't really know, some of a Shopify store, they don't really know what they're going to get in that case. The climate friendly badge has added now, it's a very big badge that shows up both in search and on your product page that tells people not only that you have these certifications, but about the certification. And Amazon is working directly with each of these certifying bodies to plug right into their databases. And so it'll just pop up a lot of the time. And the other thing, which is probably from a business standpoint, one of the biggest motivating factors or something that gets them the badge quite often is efficiency. And so it's unit efficiency. So naturally that brings down costs of products anyway. So businesses are doing this necessarily, but Amazon is also now rewarding it by giving them that badge as well for having a best-in-class efficiency. There's less waste, basically.
So that badge comes to people who have strong environmental policies around the production of their products? Is that where that typically shows up?
Yeah. So they've got a plug-in to USDA Organic. They've got a plug-in to, I think it's Climate One, and I can send you the page as well. They've got about 19-20 badges that they currently integrate with and are adding more all the time.
Okay. Do you see Amazon making any moves from a corporate standpoint in that same direction, or are they just trying to tap into kind of the product-based or product level of that?
What I can tell you, I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn and I see a lot of people popping up that they're hiring, a lot of jobs that they're focused on around sustainability, especially in logistics. About the circular economy. They're actually hiring people with circular economy in their titles. A lot of these, of course, are in the, my guess is that a lot of them are focused on understanding the regulatory changes, but you can see definitely a shifting focus happening there.
So right now it feels like it's coming, the pressures from the EU back into other areas. And so people probably are seeing an opportunity where if they have to do it for the EU, then they might as well just do it across the board. And so you're seeing those badges start to pop up.
Yeah. I mean, they have marketplaces all over the world. They want to keep growing them. They want to make sure they're compliant. And recently in the US as well, with the FDA and children's toys in particular, they've gotten hit really hard regulatory wise. They've lost a lot of big cases, which they, you know, they probably deserve to lose. And they're starting to clean their act up a lot. They are entering sort of the maturing phase of where they're at in terms of the marketplace, where they are not focused so much on growth because they've hit a lot of those big areas. So they're not looking to break a lot of rules anymore. They're looking to follow the rules and maintain what they have.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, it's always really interesting to see how one area kind of shove an entire marketplace a certain direction. And likewise, how hard people will fight for that to not happen, even if they're positioned really well to take advantage of those kind of regulatory changes. It's really interesting how hard some big business will fight against that kind of stuff. So it's kind of fascinating to see. What are some of the other ways that people can take advantage of some of these certifications, I guess, on Amazon? You mentioned, you know, not only the Climate Pledge, but a few other badges. What are some of the other ones that are available?
I mean, in terms of marketing badges, the biggest one is Prime. So, and that's the decision whether you're going to ship your inventory into Amazon or try and ship it to the customer yourself. Most people on Amazon will filter you right out. First thing they do, there's a big little button that says filter for Prime. And that means that you've shipped your inventory into Amazon and Amazon is handling the shipping. That's going to be the hugest advantage that you should probably be taking advantage of because everyone else is. And you'll lose a lot of sales if you're just trying to do FBM ship from your house or from your normal logistics facility.
So Prime would be analogous to Fulfilled by Amazon. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yeah.
I've heard that terminology before as well.
Yeah.
Cool. So basically that allows customers to take advantage of the Amazon shipping, flat rate shipping for the 2-day deal that they've had out there for a number of years now. It's clearly working pretty well for them.
Yeah, that's their big value prop and the reason they've been able to grow so fast.
Yeah, I have seen a couple of other things pop up recently that will do comparison shopping around, like if you don't need it in a couple of days, there are a couple of mechanisms out there that are getting pretty interesting in terms of doing comparison shopping against Amazon. If, for example, you don't need it quite as quickly, and they'll show you the cost plus shipping and the time frame. So it's kind of cool to see people starting to push around on that. I know that that's one of the things at Amazon that really captured a lot of market share. Are there any other cool things that you're seeing Amazon changing that people should be aware of, consider taking advantage of in the coming months?
Nothing comes off the top of my head. I mean, I know the other big place that we help a lot of people with is advertising. They continue to develop their advertising options. If that is a place where you're at and you can spend maybe around at least $5,000 a month on advertising, you're really looking to drive sales, that's definitely something that you should be focusing on.
So those would be promoted products within Amazon?
Yeah, exactly. So that's their PPC option.
That's great to know. And so people should probably be considering a $5,000 per month spend on that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little biased because we do it professionally. And so we do it when people have trouble with it. But people always have trouble with it now because it's really complex. But the thing is that it's not worth bringing on managed services if you're not spending enough. Like, it's just not possible. You lose money on the management fees. I mean, you can do it yourself. Like, the easiest advice I can give is to try and segment things out as best you can. You have options between two different main campaign types, auto and manual. If you're going to go with auto, choose 4 or 5, break them into segments. What you have is you have 4 different targets. You can target close match products, loose match, substitutes, and complements. You're looking at me like trying to fall. But what if you see it, you'll understand what you're looking at. And you just focus each campaign on one of those and shut the other targets off. And that way you can be more drilled down. The algorithm understands kind of what's going on more and more in that one. And it's a lot easier to manage the more you can segment things out.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That makes sense in terms of where to start. Because if you aren't doing any segmentation, then it's cast such a wide net that it's probably not as effective.
Yeah. And the hard part is that that's the best way to do it, but it creates more work. Then, you know, you've suddenly got a problem where you've created a lot of work for yourself that you don't have time to manage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when someone comes on for an engagement with your company, what does that look like? What are some of the first things that they should be prepared to answer or have ready to go when they're engaging with Better World Products?
Yeah. So, I mean, a key understanding of what you think your actual problem is and where you want to go. So on the consulting side, a lot of what we do is strategic plans. And basically putting all the pieces together to figure out what's the best way to get you from point A to point B. So understanding and telling us what point A and point B are is really important. And then the first part of the process there is we actually just kind of look and see what you got going on for listings, just auditing. We give video feedback. So we use Loom a lot. I'll just go through the listings, give you feedback there. We'll go through the advertising count, give you feedback there. If you've got account health issues, I can look through that and give you feedback there and tell you kind of what I think, what's going on, and if we can help you in that situation.
Gotcha. That sounds great. So it's a really a strategy first kind of approach to it, where you're really making sure you understand the landscape and not only what's going on now, but where your clients are hoping to go in order to put a plan together.
Yeah. And of course, if it's even feasible, like a lot of people want to hit certain sales targets these days, but their supply chain isn't strong enough to get the inventory in to hit those sales numbers. So we can crank up, say, the PPC, and we can get you those targets, but then you run out of stock for 2 months. And there's dozens of ships lined up in California, and you got a 2 month wait just to get it in the country.
Yeah, that's becoming an increasingly large challenge for many sectors of the economy in terms of just goods. I know I have a friend who owns a bike shop here in the Netherlands area, and they're really seeing huge impacts in terms of being able to get any sort of products in. So they're doing a lot more repair. Unfortunately, my other friend works there and he's a pro mechanic. And so he's able to, I can attest to this myself. If you're in the Netherlands area, I'll go ahead and plug him. The shop is called Tin Shed Sports, but Marcus is the owner and my buddy Eric works there and he's a world-class mechanic. And he's definitely helped me limp along on a rear derailleur this year that has no business being alive still. So it's kind of cool to see how people can kind of help you keep something going as opposed to necessarily having to replace it immediately. But if you're selling product, that's certainly not a good solution for you, right? Is to be able to fix it. So that's a pretty big challenge. And do people try? I mean, I'm sure that the most sophisticated companies are doing kind of all of that analysis in terms of when they actually anticipate materials to come in and how much they want to throttle on or off their advertising or even their search spend in order to keep just ahead of fulfillment, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of spreadsheets, a lot of spreadsheets.
Is that something that you and your team help with? Is people figure that out or do most of your clients have that mechanism sorted out?
Some have it figured out. Some of them have it locked down. But for those who don't, we definitely help. I love Excel. So it's one of my favorite places to play. So that's definitely something that we do.
That's cool to know that you have a whole suite of services that you can offer for people who maybe just want a little bit of consulting or want soup to nuts, having you and your team just kind of manage their Amazon play. Do you do other search stuff? So if somebody, you mentioned early on that people should have their channel and try and get that going as well as they can, and then add other channels as they mature, do you help them with their off Amazon work as well? Or are you strictly Amazon?
Yeah, we try really hard not to do that.
Okay.
One of the great things is that a lot of, say, we do a lot of graphic design, a lot of infographics, all of that can be repurposed if you need it. If we've already made it for you for Amazon and you need to resize, that's no problem. We can do that. That's fine. And then you can repurpose the copy as well.
Yeah. So that's great because at least you can work one direction or the other. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. A lot of what we'll see is like, we'll write copy for our Amazon listing and then I'll go and check their website a couple of days later and all that copy's on there as well.
Okay. Is there any thing people should look out for if they're doing that in terms of either punishment or benefit or anything?
No, I think Google has a pretty good understanding when something's from Amazon. And I think they've gone back and forth on whether they want to rank Amazon on the top of the page for when people are searching for brands, when they want to rank the actual brand up there. But yeah, I don't think you'll be harmed for it. I don't think there is an SEO element for Google for what they look at for Amazon sites, but I don't think it would conflict with anything.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, how does Google Shopping work? Is it pulling Amazon listings in there as well at this point, or does that go back and forth as well?
So I think you have to have a separate thing set up there. But I mean, in terms of duplicate content, because it's e-commerce, it's not unique content. I think Google understands it. It's going to be the same content everywhere, basically, because it's the same product. So I don't think it should be anything to worry about.
That's good to know. What are some of the things that you've seen nonprofits do in Amazon that's worked well? Most nonprofits don't necessarily have product. You know, we've certainly had a few on the show that have, but are there some product plays that would be wise for nonprofits to consider to put on Amazon?
It's definitely an option. I remember we were talking about this before and it was a really interesting topic. The first thing that comes to mind is their KDP program with Kindle, publishing books, publishing content in that way. Amazon actually has Amazon Merch, which is an entire print-on-demand platform. So if they've got merch that they want to put out and they can integrate it Well, they used to be able to integrate it with Shopify. I don't think that works anymore. But if that's something they want to do, if they want Netherland Trail coffee mug, that's an option. They could do that as well.
And so that would keep them from having to have inventory because it's just print on demand merchandise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All they have to do is do the creative part of it.
Well, that sounds like a pretty cool idea. I mean, a lot of nonprofits do, that would be the one product that they actually have is merch. So that'd be kind of an interesting play to see, instead of having to buy large quantities of t-shirts or whatever, you just print on demand. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think it's a good option. It gets rid of that upfront cost and it gives you access to a wider market.
Yeah, I like that idea. It seems like if nonprofits could find opportunities that were aligned with what they do, with the services that they provide and the people that they serve, you know, you could co-brand all sorts of things, I would imagine, that would work. So I'm thinking about NATO in particular. In theory, we could find tool sets or gloves or things like that that are actually not just a hat or a t-shirt that people might be interested in buying to support the nonprofit, as well as get something cool that they could use on the trail.
Yeah. And I think one of the great things about like trails and nature is that you can take amazing photos. You can put together a photo book. You can put together trail books. You can put together a knowledge base that those hikes have given you. And you can go into a lot of detail.
Yeah. And it sounds to me like that's one of the first things that everyone who's trying to sell something on Amazon should look into, is how good or not so good are the photos that you're using on.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's great. So tell me a little bit about your Conservation Alliance partnership. Tell us all about how that came to be and what you're doing with Conservation Alliance.
Yeah. So this is kind of an evolution of kind of how we're trying to organize the agency to give back, first being a member of 1% for the Planet and thinking about the kind of companies we want to engage with. And then next with Conservation Alliance and thinking, how do we want to give back to our communities, engage with them? And that's part of the reason that reached out to you. And they're now working with NATO as well, is to work with lots of smaller nonprofits to help give back in that way as well. Conservation Alliance, I think we became a member maybe a year after 1% for the Planet. And so, I mean, a lot of our contribution is actually just the main annual membership fee. We engage with them on the grant cycles that are going on. But I wouldn't say we have so much cash that we can fund the $50,000 grant, but it's amazing seeing it and seeing where that's all going. And we are allowed to vote, so we can vote on the different projects. One of the things that I would like to do more and more is to really bring the team together and have them engage around picking who to vote for. I've talked to the Conservation Alliance and they said that individuals within the organization can cast separate votes, which is an interesting concept. So I'd love to do that more. And that is kind of like where I'm looking to head to, which is also, I've tried it once and I will try it again next year, which is trying to pursue B Corp. So, and that is kind of sort of the third step of the evolution of who we work with, working with our communities, and then working on ourselves internally and making the lives of the people we work with better.
Right. What were some of the challenges that you ran into with the B Corp certification?
You need 80 points to pass and we got 79. So it's a very complex process. We've worked with some really amazing consultants on the job. The hardest thing is putting together all the paperwork. And it's like going through that process, I definitely have a lot of respect for all the B Corps out there and just how incredibly organized all of their internal documents must be.
Almost feels, we've explored B Corp here at Relish Studio a number of times as well. And we had a similar challenge where we would get to the point where we were over 80 and then they'd come back and ask us some questions that made an adjustment to it, which is fine. That a lot of times there's either, you know, it wasn't that I was gaming it, I just didn't understand exactly what was required or what have you. But one of the things that I have found just from my experience is it does feel like there's a little bit of a challenge for small businesses to become a B Corp, because there's so many things that small businesses can't take advantage of to score points. For example, you know, building ownership or major lease in a building where you actually have the opportunity to shove that building's, what they're doing around a little bit as a small business. Even when we were in a green building, the percentage of that we occupied was so small that it didn't really push the numbers up as much as one would hope or would like. But I definitely think that the B Corp ethos is very sound and it encouraged people to go out and take a look at it no matter what, where you are, because if nothing else, it shines a little bit of a light on what you're doing and allows you to kind of think through things. So I think even just the process can be incredibly beneficial for cost savings and then employee benefit in terms of the lifestyle, et cetera, as well as just thinking through who your vendors are and what kind of benefits you might provide for your team.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I love the way they have it laid out there. I forget the categories, but they have them all grouped together with all their questions. And it's a great way to think about sort of what are the different areas you should be thinking about when trying to make your company better.
Yeah, it was really interesting. The first time we went through, we got our audit pretty much immediately. It was like, we said, okay, we're ready. And they scheduled our audit within the next couple of weeks. And then the second time we went through, it was going to be 3 months or something before they would actually get us through the queue, which I thought was just amazing because it demonstrated that within that 1 or 2 year period, how much like understanding of B Corp and desire to build a business that was aligned with those kinds of ideals, how much that had grown up even in just that short period of time. So it was a little frustrating, I guess, because we had to wait, but it was a really cool wait because the reasons why we did have to. It wasn't because they just didn't want to. It was that they were that backed up. So it's pretty cool. I think when we do it again, when we try again, I think that I'll probably try and do it over the course of a period of time as opposed to deciding I'm doing this and setting I need to get this done in the next week or whatever, because there is a lot. There's a lot to it.
Yeah. You just keep working towards it is kind of how it goes.
Yeah. So how are you guys expanding your reach and your ability to serve more clients and for getting more Better World products into your system?
Well, so we do is on LinkedIn right now. It's a combination of, say, LinkedIn and organic SEO. So we do a lot of copywriting now, a lot of blog posts, and then a lot of engagement on LinkedIn, trying to make sure we're connecting with stakeholders who are from organizations that we want to work with, that we want to engage with. And then I think most importantly, just being patient and building those relationships, going to see people, hopefully more and more at conferences. That's a big thing. One of the things that I didn't understand growing up, when I started my business, I grew up with like computers and stuff. So I thought I could do it all from the computer. But businesses are full of people and people do business with people. So I have to get out there. I have to talk to people. And I enjoy it and I'm looking forward to doing it more. Generally, I'm a little bit more introverted. So getting to that point is a bit harder. But my first conference last month in a long time, and it was an amazing experience. It's so good to get out there and see people again.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting how long it's been since we've been able to have that experience of being able to make dozens of connections in a very short period of time with people we've maybe never met before. Have you seen effective use of any tools in the interim that you feel people have done a remarkable job of facilitating that kind of interaction without having to be in person?
I would say that my favorite tool is Loom. Just recording the videos, whether that's doing the audits a lot of the time, because they're not always expecting it. And so suddenly they can see you talking. And that's so huge to building trust. And when you see someone, you see them talking, you just get used to it and you get a feel for the person and you know right then basically if you're going to trust them and move forward or not. And that's really the biggest obstacle. And doing that through LinkedIn, I love LinkedIn. Email's been great. I've built scalable sales outreach systems with email, but I didn't really like it any of the times I did it. And maybe it's something that we have to return to in the future, but I'm pretty sure that just continuing to slowly build relationships will get the job done.
Yeah, I agree. We really look at marketing as relationship building. And whether it's a tiny relationship where somebody already knows that they want something and they've gone to Amazon and they found it for the price that they want, if it doesn't show up, well, there's probably a bunch of other options of where they could buy that exact same product. So really considering what that first impression is, and then how can you make people trust you, and how can you build a relationship even in a very transactional kind of environment? And we do that when we're selling bigger ticket service type stuff through multiple engagements, multiple interactions, and following up when we said we would. I completely agree. Loom is an amazing tool that if you haven't looked into it, it can be incredibly valuable because it is something that not everyone is using yet. So it does really stand out. I've been doing just follow-ups to conversations with just a quick Loom video that they have an embed a GIF in your email. And so it just has a GIF that is just my bobblehead moving around and doesn't say anything, but people are like, well, what's that? And then they click on it and you can see when people have watched it. And it's just an incredibly cool tool. So I guess giving out the secret there,
but it's something I think every business leader could benefit from, that kind of system or process in their sales or follow-ups or interactions. And then people in the nonprofit space could use that as well, just to outreach to a donor. That would be a tool that I would certainly be trying to use, just to provide a little bit of personality and a little personal touch to things. And
Yeah, I think it would be equally valuable to nonprofits, because it does help build trust, and it can be hard. It's really hard when you're starting to record those videos and to send them to people. But what's great is that Loom is a great video, is a great tool internally as well. We use it for all of our systems and processes to help give people an initial idea. Like, that visual demonstration is so powerful, and it really pushes things along a lot easier than it does. And it's great. You know, we've done thousands of videos internally, and only one person is going to see that video and we're going to forget it exists, but it just helps us communicate much better. We're going back and forth, giving feedback on copywriting, and we're not going to send an email that a person isn't going to like understand, or that they're just like, maybe they had a bad day and they read it and they're like,
Yep. It's hard to get tone in email and text, for sure. Yeah, it's funny. I had Allison Caffrey from Operations Agency on the show. I think she was on last week or a couple of weeks ago. And she runs an agency that helps specifically marketing agencies figure out process. And they leverage Loom within the processes. So they'll save those Loom videos and say, and write out the process and then link back to the Loom video. So that's another way to keep those things alive a little bit, and also just give people an extra place to go look if they just aren't understanding the screenshots and process development that's been put out. So it's another way to use that fantastic tool.
And it makes it better for everyone. Like, a lot of what I do is trying to think, when I'm designing systems and processes, is how do I design people-oriented systems and processes? Things that people really like, that allow them to do their best work and enjoy it and build while they're doing that. And human engagement's a huge part of that. Seeing people and building that connection, even if it's just over video and you're a few thousand miles away, it still works. And it helps people feel just more engaged with everything, and allowing them to communicate that through their own video, I found that they actually really enjoy it. Even if like they really don't like it at the beginning, like they're a little shy, they don't want to turn on the camera. After a while, they're comfortable on the camera, they're recording things, and they're enjoying it a lot more.
Yeah, it's really cool once you start doing something, how it becomes to do it again and to do it twice and to then do it four times. So, you know, I think we all just have to practice. You don't usually hit a home run the first time you get up to bat. It usually takes a little bit of batting cage work and et cetera. So this has been such a fun conversation. And again, I appreciate you bearing with the technical difficulties at the start. How can people find out more about what you do for businesses looking to get onto Amazon?
Yeah, so they can find us at betterworldproducts.org. Again, that's betterworldproducts.org. No, it's a mouthful. And then, of course, you can always find me on LinkedIn. My LinkedIn profile is just /Keith Hartnett.
Great. And that's with two T's at the end. So three T's.
It is.
Four T's total, I guess, if you count the first name. So
yeah, there's a lot of T's.
Lots of T's in there. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I love having these conversations and learning more about different ways people can engage and get their product to market and make more connections and do more business and inspire more people to do good things for the world. But I also really want to make sure that people take action. And so at the end of every show, I ask my guest, if there was one thing that you'd have people do after listening to the show, what would you have them do?
Get photos.
Get photos.
Yes. Get photos, please. Beautiful photos. Lots of them. Hundreds of them.
I love it. Well, people, go out, take a lot of photos that you can use to support your organization and your products that you're selling. And give Keith and his team a shout at Better World Products. And Keith, thank you again for being on the show. It's great to have you today.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
I'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
And there you have it. Another great episode of Relish This. Thanks again for listening. You can find past episodes of the show at relishthis.org. And remember, if you liked what you heard today, please subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information on purpose marketing, grab your free copy of my book, Mission Uncomfortable: How Nonprofits Can Embrace Purpose-Driven Marketing to Survive and Thrive. Get your copy now at missionuncomfortablebook.com. Thanks again for listening. Come back next week, won't you?